Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Bert Weisbord, and I'm here to talk with the very accomplished and highly regarded Northwest architect David Miller about my novel, Inside Passage. More generally, we'll discuss how the unique landscape and culture of the Pacific Northwest affects its architecture and literature. Before writing novels, I produced feature films, including Ghost Story starring Fred Astaire and Raggedy Man starring Sissy Spacek. My first novel, Inside Passage, was published in January of this year. My next novel, In Velvet, will be published in the spring of 2014. Dave is uniquely qualified to talk about architecture in the Northwest. He's a founding partner of the Seattle-based Miller Hall Partnership, which has received over 250 awards for design excellence, including the AIA Architecture Firm Award, which is given to only one firm in the United States each year. In 2010, Dave received the AIA Seattle Chapter Medal. Currently, Dave is chair for the Department of Architecture at the University of Washington, where he is also a tenured professor of architecture. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Bert. Good to talk to you.
Likewise. Let's begin by talking about the sort of unique features of the physical layout and landscape of Seattle and the Pacific Northwest. And let's just sort of start anywhere, like with access to wild country, and go from there.
Okay. Well, I guess I like to call the Puget Sound region or our coastal area of the Pacific Northwest Cascadia because it's thought of as a coastal rainforest and zone, and it's a very temperate climate. Gray skies from October to May, often called oyster light. I always like that quote. And the physical landscape is defined by mountainous topography and water. The mountains originally were covered with towering firs and hemlocks and very dense forest ground cover. So I've always thought that the ecology and the climate were really interwoven, maybe more than you typically find in the U.S.
Yeah, I would add to that that there's lots of green spaces and any number of different kind of waterways, from the Sound to Lake Washington to the Ship Canal to the rivers. So that wherever you are in Seattle or its environs, you can see wild country.
That's right. And it's interesting because I think Seattle, where you have these amazing views and you can always reference the water, the hills slope towards to the west towards Elliott Bay and Puget Sound, and then to the east towards Lake Washington. Seattle's sort of in this narrow zone between those two major waterways. So because of those great views and the topography and the sort of natural vegetation, Seattle has very few parks. It's interesting that way. I mean, it has some notable parks that were done by the Olmsteads, particularly the University of Washington campus and a string of parks along Lake Washington. But in the city, there's very few parks. And I think Seattle's defined more physically by its neighborhoods. And those neighborhoods are sort of embedded in their particular location by topography, various hills like Capitol Hill, Queen Anne Hill, First Hill, Deacon Hill. And so the neighborhoods are very clearly they have their own territory, their own sort of landscape because of this unique topography that we have.
Interesting. Let's go talk about how these characteristics impacted Inside Passage. I mean, were you aware of the Seattle landscape when you read the book?
Oh, for sure. The book, to me, describes Seattle as a kind of tough place, where you know, the physical layout and physical landscape, the building stock, the built environment is very utilitarian and kind of tough and edgy, particularly Capitol Hill, which is where the book's mostly set in Seattle. And then there's the Pipeline Corridor, which is a sub-district to Capitol Hill, which is even a little grittier still. So I think the landscape that's described in the book really comes through as truly Seattle. And at the same time, there's always the connection to the natural environment.
The other thing
I think, Bert, is that as well as parks being few, public space is lacking. And so I think most cities are made by their streets, but I think even more so that's true of Seattle.
Well, let's talk about Corey Logan, who is the heroine and who is very comfortable in her boat, navigating the very treacherous waterways of the Inside Passage. Not so good dealing with cosmopolitan Seattle. And Abe Stein, who she falls in love with, who is the psychiatrist who has to do an evaluation of her fitness as a mother in order for her to get her son back from foster care. And he's a city guy who's not so good in the country. Let's talk a little bit about that and how that worked in the book.
Right. Well, it was easy for me to sort of get into Corey's character. I grew up in Seattle after age 12, and my parents had a place on Puget Sound, so I grew up with a boat. I fished a lot, water skied. We'd camp on the beach. We'd go across to Vashon Island or Bainbridge Island in our boats as kids and camp. And so I'm very aware of as the way Corey would be comfortable on the water and navigating, which can be quite treacherous at times, and storms can come in, and the waters are because it's Puget Sound has all these passageways between islands and so forth, it can be quite challenging. You got tides,
very
you got
cold. The water is very cold. A lot of people who come from the east don't get it. You get hypothermia if you fall out of your boat.
Yeah, when I was young, I could never understand why my parents wouldn't swim in Puget Sound.
No, it's quite treacherous.
Yeah. And so, you know, I really enjoyed reading about how important being on a boat was to her. And, you know, and I've talked to friends about how, you know, I love the smell of the salt water of Puget Sound, and I can hear her maybe saying the same thing. So, but you have to be fairly self-reliant and hardy, I think, to take on some of these waterways here.
Well, it's a very unusual love story in that regard, because she is absolutely at ease, self-reliant, and super competent in very treacherous waters where you really need to know everything from the tides to the currents to the weather to, you know, seasonal factors. And Abe, who is... well, he's not competent in the wilderness, and he's a city guy, but he brings to the city a certain kind of competence that is a good fit for what she brings to wild country, and somehow the two of them work very well together. Does that resonate with you?
It does. I think I know my friends that come from the East Coast or come from outside the Northwest are a bit intimidated by our landscape here. I think in some ways because it's so dense. If you go off a trail, you can get lost pretty quickly. It's not open like a lot of deciduous forests or forests that have a very, you know, dry forest floor. We have just dense undercover, and so understory, and so some of my friends really, they hold off going to. They're comfortable in the city. They love Seattle, but they hold off going to the islands or going up in the mountains. And I always encourage them to do it because it's so fantastic and beautiful. But I can understand how Abe might be more comfortable in the asphalt landscape versus the green landscape.
Well, it's a tension in the book, and it's the landscape. And whenever she's in trouble, she gets on her boat and she goes to wild country. And eventually he has to go after her and find her, which is really hard for him. And then he has to bring her back to the city where he knows how to negotiate the legal system and the foster care system and the bureaucracy and deal with lawyers and so on and so forth.
Yeah, you really can sense that tension with Abe of his being uncomfortable in the wild. I mean, that comes across really strongly, and I think it as you say, it complements so much Corey, and that dynamic between the two is really set by that.
Let's segue here to architecture. Because, clearly the landscape is an important, it's almost a character in my book, but I think the landscape of Seattle and its culture impacts the architecture as well. I mean, and as an architect, I mean, you're working on a landmark Seattle building in the market and rethinking the waterfront after the viaduct comes down. Let's talk about how these same factors inform your decision-making when you think about those things.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, it really goes to making sure that the architecture reflects the culture and the characteristics of the people of the region. And so, I design buildings, my firm, and I know a lot of the architects, my peers here, design buildings that are authentic, have a sense of the sort of utility of buildings and less about a big move. I think that the Northwesterners don't really like extravagance, and so the architecture reflects that. The buildings they're real, they're rational, but they're, like I say, authentic, but not flashy. And so that allows the people and the space inside and out to really be the primary driver of the architecture and making the character, making the vitality of the architecture from the inside, from the people. And then we always try to, because there's little public space, we try to make our buildings more public, make our architecture public architecture, whether it's truly a civic building or not. The building on Capitol Hill that I did, the Lofts building, where we opened it up, and so you can roll up garage doors and turn the dining spaces or the living spaces, the workspaces, because it's a live-work building, into a kind of porch, and where you can feel the city, you can feel that we have this great temperate climate, so we can do this with our buildings.
There is a lot of attention to turning inside spaces into potential outside spaces, some sort of interaction between those two, the ability to move from one to the other, in a lot of Seattle public and private buildings.
That's right. Well, we have this great temperate climate, and so we can open our buildings year-round as long as you have some cover. The rain, you can open them up in November. You can open them up in February.
And there's no insects to
speak
of.
That's unique. Yeah, right. I don't know why that is, but we're lucky. People say, how come you don't have screens on your buildings? But we don't need them. And so you really can just make the walls go away. And we've done that in a number of buildings. And Fisher Pavilion, Seattle Center, the exterior wall can completely roll up and flow from inside to outside very easily.
Talk to me a little bit more specifically about the new building you're designing in the market and this whole redesign of the waterfront and how that is impacted by what we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what I'm finding is the challenge here is to, and it goes back to what we're talking about with the nature of Capitol Hill, too, but there's the market has this gritty quality, this very dense labyrinth of spaces that you kind of discover. And so our challenge and our goals are to, challenges and goals are to create this flavor of the market, but to create more civic space. To invite people to move through the new project and then flow on down to the waterfront. So we have as much civic space in this project as we do retail or housing or commercial space. And that I think that's going to be quite a gift to Seattle. And but at the same time, we want to make sure that we make it a truly Seattle project. And so we need to do things like provide rain cover, provide canopies so people can, be on these, be in these spaces and flow comfortably from one space to the next on down to the water without being too impacted by, the rain or the wind because it can be stormy here even in the summer sometimes.
Well, I'm very excited.
So there's that, and then I think there's the materials of this area, which tends to be a more gray palette. It's interesting. You would think with our gray skies that we would have bright colors, but we tend to have a lot of metal, and I think that comes from Boeing and PACCAR trucks and all those things that are manufactured here. Utilitarian concrete and masonry and metal handrails and all these things that so we just want to bring all those materials out and to complement what is the predominant material palette of the city.
Interesting. Let's shift gears slightly, because one of the things that certainly informed my writing, and I suspect you think about a lot, too, when you design a building, is the unique character of Northwesterners. And now I'm not talking about the physical landscape so much as, the character of the people who live and work and are attracted to the Northwest. And how would you describe that character?
Well, Seattle was settled by Scandinavians and Asians, but there's a very large Scandinavian population and strong Norwegian heritage here. And then, of course, we have this connection to the Pacific Rim, the large Asian population, Japanese, Chinese, and, it's really much more of a melting pot now. I heard on the radio today that there's 34 languages spoken in Seattle.
Wow.
But the Scandinavians, are hardy, self-reliant, tough, but not verbal. And I think maybe more, the Seattle native is more right-brained or more visual than verbal, and so I think that's one reason that the connection to the natural environment and making spaces, streets that are comfortable and have a kind of realness and not capricious or just really straightforward and rational comes from the the people and their characteristics. Obviously, environmentally conscious, and I think pretty much politically progressive, and so the Northwesterners are happy to open their buildings, and there's a lot of well, the other thing I should say is that the Seattle tends to attract drifters, and I think a lot of people kind of migrate. They just keep going west, and they keep going north, and they get to Seattle, and there's not too much farther to go unless you
well, let's talk about that for a second, because Seattle is kind of a magnet for eccentrics and people who want to reinvent themselves. And it's also very accepting of people's eccentricities. I mean, you don't have to be a certain way in Seattle. Although you're right in describing, I mean, your average Seattleite doesn't really welcome an East Coaster who's very full of himself or herself and wants to talk about all their accomplishments. They're very understated. But, you know, accepting that kind of extravagance, or, you know, there is, it's a very accepting culture, and you can sort of come, and this is certainly part of why Nick Season, the character who is running for attorney, state attorney general, who has a very dark past, is able to succeed in Seattle, because people do not ask a lot of questions about who he was and what he's done.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure, and that totally fits with the Seattle personality. And then, like Corey or Billy, very open, even though Billy, you know, is troubled and is a bit of an outcast at school or whatever, you still get a sense that he's accepting of people and open-minded. And so that, you know, as a young man, he gets that from living in this environment.
Yeah, it's a very cosmopolitan environment that is not very psychologically aware. It's not like people want to talk about their feelings very much, or, you know, they'd rather, if somebody is upset, chop some wood or go for a hike or, you know. But the other side to that is that, and I suspect that this manifests itself in some of the work that you do, that interesting new ideas can be introduced without a lot of resistance.
That's true, yes. And I think the people that are building here, whether they're private developers or they're politicians, or institutions, they want to do something that is unique, and they're interested in new ideas for sure. At the same time, they want the new ideas to be conceptually interesting, but not just show-offy, just for form's sake or whatever. And so the ideas have to have substance and content, which is great.
I think it's a very healthy environment in that way, and that's part of what my book is about, is authenticity. Is, you know, in my case, it's how do you tell the real relationships from the ones that look good? I mean, you have Jesse and Nick, who seem to be the perfect couple, you know, only he's a pathological killer, and she has no idea who she's with.
Yeah.
And although they're both very accomplished and successful and presentable and, poised, then you have Abe, who's kind of bumbly, who falls in love with Corey, who is just a mismatch for him by all conventional standards. But it's an authentic relationship, and it works in real terms, and it's genuine love, and it, you know, wins out in the end. I mean, and I think that that's something that is very believable in the Northwest, given that people care about authenticity and what's real.
Mm-hmm. And I think they, as you said earlier, I don't think we ask a lot of questions. And so, like, Abe can show up and have a certain, you know, confidence and come across as capable. And at first you don't ask any questions because you want to be gracious and let the person be who they are. So I can see where he would be able to pull off that, that sort of masquerade quite easily with this kind of culture.
And I suspect that it frees you up as an architect in some ways to boldly present your new ideas and not and feel like people could give you a chance before they jump to judgment.
True. But I will say that in Seattle, the flaw in all this is that, again, because of, I think, wanting to accept the ideas and be open-minded, we're very consensus-driven. So these public projects that I work on, they go on and on in terms of public meetings and building consensus and getting everyone on board. And my challenge with that sometimes is to be able to hold on to a strong idea and not have it watered down by this public process.
And that's
plus,
interesting.
You know, that's okay the other way, too.
Yeah. But let's talk a little more about some of the public buildings you've done, because some of them really reflect a lot of what we've talked about, and clearly you've held on to the ideas that inspired them, and some of them are quite wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thank you. I think Fisher Pavilion at Seattle Center is a great example of what we're talking about. It's a building that sits in the landscape. It takes advantage of this topography change there in that particular spot, Seattle Center, and Seattle Center is our cultural district. And so it kind of bridges this swale, and so you can get from the top of the swale, you can get onto the roof, and it has this great plaza. And then the space that the building actually creates is this just this big hall that you can do so many things in, and then it opens to the landscape to the north, and you can push the doors aside and just flow in and out, and then it connects to the International Fountain, which is one of the iconic art pieces in Seattle. So, you know, being able to, but the building's very utilitarian. It's it's really about its place in the landscape more than its architectural expression. So I think that it does all those things we're talking about.
Well, Dave, it's been great to talk to you about this. Very interesting to me. I like to take a minute and tell people how to get the book. You can go to www.burtweisbord, that's BURTWEISSBOURD.com, and go from there to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Indie Books. You can also IndieBound, excuse me. And you can also just go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or your local bookstore and ask for it. It's called Inside Passage, and I think it is influenced by a lot of the things we've been discussing. And, of course, if you get to Seattle, you ought to look for what are the names of some of the books that describe your work, Dave?
Well, I wrote a book called Toward a New Regionalism, which talks about the environmental architecture of the Pacific Northwest. And then we have the book Miller Hull, Architects of the Pacific Northwest.
Well, I can highly recommend both of those. And again, Dave, it was great talking to you, and I hope we get to do this again.
My pleasure, Bert.
Thanks very
much.
Bye.
Thanks.
Since the number one. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. It's just no good anymore since